You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, everybody, we got a great one today. You know, for a change, our old friend Mark Leibovich of The Atlantic joins me. Of course, we talk about Hegseth. Jesus, what a dick. On Thursday, Admiral Frank Bradley evidently testified to the Intelligence Committee that the two survivors were still in the fight and trying to secure the drugs so they could be transferred to another boat. I'm on the other boat, and I get a call from these survivors. I'm not sure how, from a radio, I guess, that is in the drink. But anyway, and they say, we just got hit by a missile, and the other nine people on the boat are dead. Can you come pick us up and gather up the cocaine that's in the water now? Yeah, all the others are dead. Can you come pick us up? Now, you've no doubt seen the video of the hit. There were 11 people in the boat. Do you need 11 people in a boat to deliver drugs? Don't you want more room for the drugs? I think the first strike was illegal, even if they knew for sure they were carrying drugs, which evidently they don't know for sure those things. But the second strike, that just seems to me to be a war crime. On a lighter note, Mark and I talk about Trump and his disgusting attack on Somalis, whom he called garbage. For him to leverage the actions of a few with such vulgarity is deplorable. I am, of course, a Minnesotan, and represented the large Somali community in Minnesota. They are our neighbors, our friends, and they were my supporters. Trump is a detestable racist and has been his entire life. You remember in his first term, he referred to Haiti and African nations as shithole countries. Way back in 1973, Trump and his father were sued by the Justice Department for refusing to rent their apartments to black people and Puerto Ricans. It is a disgrace that this reprehensible man is our president, but you know that. A couple of things broke after Mark and I taped this on Thursday. The Supreme Court, by a surprise, 6-3 vote, decided that Texas can gerrymander to add 5 new Republican congressional seats. It's okay for a state legislature to politically gerrymander. It's not okay to racially gerrymander, which is what the lower court said it did. Judge Jeffrey Brown, a Trump appointee, wrote, "Substantial evidence shows that Texas racially gerrymandered the 2025 map," and that's what Texas did. They put black people and Latinos in the districts to make them even more Democratic than they already were in order to create 5 additional Republican districts. The six conservative justices disagreed with the Trump-appointed lower court judge. The three liberal justices vociferously disagreed, and now Republicans will probably have five more Texas Republican representatives in Congress. Some better news, a grand jury in the Eastern District of Virginia refused to reindict New York Attorney General Letitia James, I'm guessing, because the case against her was bogus. In our conversation, Mark and I discuss a number of subjects. One, oddly, is Dick Cheney, who Mark had written about a number of times in the Atlantic. I, of course, loathe Dick Cheney, mainly because he got us into the war in Iraq by saying there, let me try to do Cheney, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. But Mark paints a kinder picture of Cheney. Of course, Cheney hated Trump as much as anyone and was one of the few anti-Trump Republicans who actually endorsed Kamala Harris. Mark's not sure whether that helped or hurt Harris. So Mark Leibovich joins us today. It's a great one, you know, for a change. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Al. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for coming back on. It's been a good week for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, that's what I'm here to talk about.
Well, you wrote a book on the NFL, Big Game.
I did.
Which I enjoyed a lot.
The Pats seem to be back. And, you know, it's been a really, really long 4 or 5 years since we've been good. And, you know, there are people around, there are kids like 3 years old around New England who have lived their entire life.
Well, this year, I think they're leading the NFL.
I think they have the best record in all of the NFL.
Wow. Okay. So not a great week for a Hegseth.
No, or the Minnesota Vikings. But, yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, I just figured the cleaner transition. Yeah, Pete Hegseth. Here's the thing on Pete Hegseth. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, he has one thing after another, right? I mean,
yeah, Signalgate. Now, your boss was, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic was copied on Signalgate.
Yeah, that became Signalgate. Yeah, so Signalgate is, for those listeners who haven't followed it, basically my boss. Jeff Goldberg was sitting in his car one day in the parking lot of a Safeway, and he gets this Signal message from someone who apparently was on a theoretically private Signal chat with very high-level national security cabinet-level people in the administration, wrote about it, and that became Signalgate. I mean, this shouldn't happen. And there was a review from the Pentagon this week confirming how negligent this was.
This is unencrypted?
Signal is like an encrypted kind of private messaging system that a lot of people use. But in fact, you know, there are even far many layers, many more layers of encryption that high-level national security forces or people are availed of. So, yeah, this is not something theoretically that they would have wanted the editor of The Atlantic to be part of, especially since it was on the record and so forth. Jeff was very responsible in what he did.
He revealed it, but after, of course, the mission. They were bombing Yemen.
Yep, it was a Yemen operation.
And if this had, you know, presumably somebody could have gotten a hold of this and warned the Houthis.
Could have been catastrophic.
Right. And so that wasn't good. But, of course, last week, the Washington Post reported that Hegseth had ordered the killing of the two survivors of that first strike on a drug boat.
Yeah, on the
other. Alleged.
Alleged drug dealers or drug traffickers.
Have you seen the video of this? Because there were 12 people on that boat.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it. I mean, I've seen, I think, what everyone else has, which is, you know, to the layperson and presumably just Pete Hegseth just sort of sitting there. It doesn't tell you a lot. It just, you see an explosion, you see some kind of fallout.
But I have a question. Drug dealers, why would they have 12 people in a boat?
I don't know. You know, this is not my world, Al. I mean, it's confusing. I mean, it sounded, you know, from the Post report that some very, very you know, inhumane and illegal international activity was going on at the behest of the people in charge, whoever, whether it was Pete Hegseth or one of his deputies or what have you.
Admiral Bradley.
Admiral, yeah. But I mean, it's a very serious charge if, in fact, you know, this is what happened.
Well, the charge is, of course, they bombed it first, which we don't know is really legal to begin with.
Yeah. Put that aside, though.
Put that aside.
Yeah.
There are two survivors of the first bombing, and in the Washington Post, they said that Hegseth gave the order to kill them all, to kill these last two.
Yep.
And he's denied that.
Yeah.
I think he's lying, but will we find out is the question.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hopefully there will be some kind of either more thorough reporting done on it or some kind of internal review that.
Well, actually, the Congress, I think, is.
Yes. And they said they will. Look, I mean, unlike many other instances in these last year since Trump has taken over, year or so, the ranking Republican in the Senate.
Wicker.
Mississippi. Yeah, yeah. So they're actually looking into it. They seem to be taking it seriously. And look, there seem to be, based on the responses from the Pentagon and within the White House, there's a level of nervousness, clearly, that even Trump and Hegseth seem aware that this would be very problematic if, in fact, it was true. I mean, Trump said that he would not have endorsed killing the two people in the water if they were, in fact, defenseless and so forth. So anyway, yeah, we'll see where that goes.
He said that before Hegseth denied that he had known about it. And he kind of says it was fog of war and it's legal. And
yeah.
Remember the six members of Congress who told members of the military not to follow illegal orders?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was terrible. And then a few days later, here we have a great example of why a mid or not high level member of the Pentagon or of the military would not want to follow illegal orders. I mean, it's sort of a perfect illustration just about a week or so.
And after. Trump wanted to hang them for saying that.
Yep, he did. He called for, I guess, Mark Kelly and, you know, Jason Crow. There were a bunch of veterans in there. Yeah, I mean, it was appalling. But yeah, I mean, that seems to have been replaced by the actual on the ground, or actually in real life, real time example of why following illegal orders would be not a good thing.
So they've killed so far 80 people transporting drugs. And then this past week, Trump pardons. And these are people on boats somewhere in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
People paid maybe $100 if they're transporting drugs. $100, yeah. $300, I don't know.
Yeah.
Then he pardons the former Honduran president, Juan Orlando Hernandez.
Seems like a contradiction, Al.
Yeah. He was convicted. You know who was a prosecutor in that case? Emil Bovee.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he must be very troubled about this.
Yeah.
It's amazing how, Emil Bovee. Yeah, where have we heard that name recently?
Well, he was a defense attorney. He was a prosecutor mainly, but he was a defense attorney for Trump in his trial in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hush money from Stormy Daniels. And
yeah. I mean, let's just say, by the way, in the larger context of all the wrongdoing that he's been involved with, certainly, you know, in the last year alone, I mean, it does sort of render that case, especially being the sort of tip of the spear and the prosecutions that went on in the last couple of years, to be seemingly a bit frivolous. But either way,
I think it actually hurt. I mean, if we had just gotten to the January 6th case.
Yep. Or even the Georgia case. But either way, even the Georgia case, which I guess is now was the last remaining potential legal jeopardy that Trump was in, has now gone by the wayside officially as of the last few days.
Yeah. Oh. So Hernandez flooded the U.S. with drugs, 400 tons of cocaine. And Trump says he was set up by the current lefty president.
It was a setup. It was all very scattershot. A lot of people are saying it was unfair. So he pardoned him. I mean, there's probably a lot of machinations.
You know who was the go-between for him?
Who?
Roger Stone.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess it's on the up and up then. I guess it sounds like it's on a level.
Whoa. Well, he was pardoned too. I mean, really right? Well. Yeah.
It's like it's kind of this great, you know, collective of legal authorities now that, you know, are all united under this, you know, whatever law school they attended, but also they've all been pardoned. So they know the judicial system better than many people and have a perspective that we should all respect.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mark Leibovich. You know, when you're old like me, you're a target for cybercrime, scams, and identity theft. But then again, everybody is, especially during the holidays when cybercrime spikes. That's why it's more important than ever to have Webroot. Webroot's Total Protection is an all-in-one product with plan options for individuals and families. They provide antivirus protection, identity protection, VPNs, backups, and more. That's a lot of stuff. Antivirus protection stops emerging threats like malware, ransomware, phishing, and scams. It also includes a password manager to protect your logins. Webroot's identity protection includes up to $1 million in expense reimbursement for stolen funds due to identity theft. They monitor the dark web, ooh, scary, and credit and financial monitoring. Plus, you can set up a VPN, that's virtual private network, for up to 10 devices, which means you can hide your IP address, personal data, and location from hackers. Webroot has been protecting customers for over 25 years with a 90% retention rate. That's because of their lightning-fast scans and 24/7 U.S.-based customer support. And it's up to you who to protect. For multi-device and multi-identity plans, you choose who you share protection with, from family to friends. Protect yourself and your family from cybercrime this holiday season with 75% off Webroot Total Protection at webroot.com/franken. That's 75% off for a limited time, but only with my exclusive code at webroot.com/franken. With my exclusive discount, Webroot Total Protection is less than $50 for a year. Wow. That's all in one device, identity, privacy, and backup protection for $50. Peace of mind for $50. Talk about the best gift you can give yourself or your loved ones. We are back with Mark Leibovich of The Atlantic. I guess on Wednesday, Trump pardoned a Democrat.
Henry Cuellar of Texas, a moderate conservative, kind of border hawkish Republican. He's always targeted both by the left and by the Republicans, managed to get reelected every year. You know, he was brought up on charges, I guess, involving financial stuff.
Money laundering, bribery, and
yeah, like
that kind of thing.
Yeah,
he allegedly took $600,000 from an Azerbaijani oil company and a Mexican commercial bank.
Yeah, I mean, who among us, Al? Who among us? Anyway, Trump pardoned him. And, you know, on a purely nakedly political level, I mean, Republicans, he's in a very precarious or sort of swingy district in South Texas. I mean, Republicans who are going to need every House seat they need, we're sort of seeing his district as a very promising pickup opportunity. And obviously, they were going to campaign against the legal problems that the Cuellar has been having.
Is he running for reelection?
He is indeed. Yeah. And you know, and I guess Trump has taken his own party's biggest argument against Henry Cuellar away from them, which is that he is legally suspect or ethically suspect and so forth. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of people within the Republican sort of House campaign committee and people who know the district and know what the map looks like who did not like this at all.
So he's running again.
Yeah, although Trump does seem to have a affection for, I mean, he's very bipartisan in that he will pardon, seems to pardon certain Democratic criminals also, or at least go easy on them, whether it's, you know, Cuellar or, you know, Blagojevich.
Well, he's pardoned, he's made a lot of money on pardons. We had Liz Oyer on the podcast a few weeks ago. She was the former pardon attorney for Biden. And basically, she laid out where Trump is profiting from the pardons.
Yeah.
Which he's doing. The Trump family has made like, we had David Kirkpatrick from the New Yorker on, who had written an article on how much money the Trump family has made in just in the first year of this presidency. And it was $4 billion.
Pretty good. I mean, remember in 2008, after Obama was elected, I mean, you were probably deep in recount land at that point, Al, but you know, the first big sort of post-election scandal was the Blagojevich thing. Remember that? And he, like, the huge outrage, and he became a pariah almost immediately, and he wound up going to jail. But, you know, he was basically selling a Senate seat. I mean, it was sort of using his own authority to sort of
weigh. This is the governor of
Illinois. Either the appointment of a senator to replace Obama at the time, or, you know, it obviously just basically an abuse of power. And that was considered a massive, massive scandal at the time, which, you know, something like that probably would happen rather seamlessly today, you would think, right? So.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's just disgusting how much this president is profiting from this presidency.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, David Kirkpatrick, by the way, my former deskmate at the New York Times, great reporter, very, very good guy. And that was a great piece. I mean, I, you know, to actually have someone quantify the amount of windfall that Trump and allied people and the family and so forth can sort of reap from this office is kind of astounding when you put a figure on it. And it looks like a very viable figure, if you ask me. But yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of a, this is all a kind of writ large daily example of the flood the zone thing about the kind of corruption that has gone on. And, you know, individual sort of minds can only process so much. And this is, you know, we're talking about a universe where, you know, people like you and me, and presumably people who listen to this, are pretty engaged and who know the issues better than most. And you know, the fact is the vast majority of people don't even get to that point. So yeah, it's astounding. You'd like to think that there will be some kind of accountability one day, and you know, history, who knows what history is going to be written, what that's going to look like in 10 years, 20 years and so forth. But yeah, it's astounding. It's so orders of magnitude more than anything we've ever seen before, any party, any era, what have you.
Our friend Frank Forer, in your issue, the Atlantic's issue on what a Trump presidency would be, this is before he was elected,
right?
Wrote about corruption.
Yeah, I have to reread that.
Well, it was basically, he was saying that autocracies are corrupt. And he was talking about Hungary and Turkey. And are we in an autocracy? Are we heading toward an autocracy? What's the...
Well, yeah, I mean, you would think, I mean, think of what are some of the basic components of an autocracy, right? I mean, one is profiting from office, check. One is cronyism, helping people who are either related to you or friends with you or supportive of you or who are giving you money and so forth. Check. Prosecuting or going after political enemies in a way that is, you know, incredibly abusive of your power.
And they're going to re-indict Comey and Leticia James and...
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's that. But also just like, you know, just targeting... Even before it gets to sort of any kind of judge or sort of prosecutorial setting, I mean, just the harassment that he opens people up to when they do anything, you know, whether it's Mark Kelly getting a whole new wave of death threats or, you know, Jason Crow or what have you. But yeah, I mean, so like what categories were we missing in autocracy? the profiting we have. I mean, cronyism we have, you know, just the whole dear leader thing. I mean, there was another cabinet meeting.
Well, they aren't observing court decisions.
Also, there's that, but also, I mean, a real factor here is, I mean, will there be free and fair elections? Which, you know, one would hope, one would think, you know, there will be in next November. You could even argue that the sort of rampant orders of you know, redistrict everywhere where Republicans are in control is a form of controlling elections or sort of asserting some kind of state prerogative over elections. So, yeah, I mean, look, I will, I mean, Frank is prescient on many, many, many issues. I will go back and read aloud his predictions to see how much of it's come true. But I mean, without going back, I imagine that these are some of the things, or these are some of the broad themes that, that he would have laid out.
I mean, how about kicking the press out of the Pentagon?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, go ahead. Press relations. Yeah, I mean, look at the Pentagon press corps now. I mean, it's hilarious. I mean, actually, it's not hilarious. It's deeply troubling, Al, but it's, I mean, it's kind of by the book. And the question, it's not the question for now, but I mean, can you actually revert to something that is in the same ballpark as normalcy when and if this ever ends, right? I mean, presumably it will end one day, but what's the new normal going to look like after Trump is no longer a factor in our politics?
The National Guard shooting, which was incredibly tragic, and a 20-year-old specialist died, and I think the other guardsman is still in critical condition.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't heard any updates in the last few days, but it was certainly critical at first.
Trump's response was really racist.
Yeah, what was that response? I mean, it was basically, he said, all right, we're going to put hundreds more guardsmen on the streets in D.C.
Well, but it was more a crackdown on our immigration system.
Oh, yeah. He said, yeah, we're going to stop the third world immigration. I mean, That's a real specific strategy. We're going to stop third world immigration.
Here are some of the things he did. He put Afghans in the U.S. Got a pause in their ability to get a green card, U.S. citizenship, or a visa. There are 200,000 Afghans who have come to the United States since the Taliban took over.
Yeah.
And many of these were people who fought for us. Or helped us, or translators. I mean, Jason Kander is a friend of mine. He's gotten a lot of Afghan translators and other people. Trump is going after them.
Afghans, these are as literal an ally as you can have. I mean, they literally fought side by side in an extremely dicey combat situation. I mean, it's not just sort of a rough national allegiance. It's not like, oh, well, that's a French national and the French are our allies. I mean, these are on the ground, you know, people who helped the United States in one of the longest wars, if not the longest war in our history, right? So, so to just sort of blanket say, look, Afghan, no more of this. This is just Biden opening the borders.
Well, they put a pause on people from anywhere in the world.
Or from the third world, Al.
Third world, I'm sorry.
No, not the entire world, just the third world.
You know, how are we going to have people like the Afghans did fight for us or work for us?
Yeah.
If they know they can't come here if things go bad?
Good question. I mean, you know, this certainly doesn't help any kind of moral authority that Americans would seek to enforce abroad or certainly here.
So now he's attacking Somalis, particularly Minnesota Somalis, who there was some corruption there, but to use that as a way to go after citizens who are American citizens now. And can we play that clip, Peter?
I don't want them in our country, I'll be honest with you. Okay? Somebody would say, oh, that's not politically correct. I don't care. I don't want them in our country. Their country is no good for a reason. Their country stinks, and we don't want them in our country. I could say that about other countries, too. We don't want them to hell. We have to rebuild our country. You know, our country's at a tipping point. We could go bad. We're at a tipping point. I don't know if people mind me saying that, but I'm saying it. We could go one way or the other, and we're going to go the wrong way if we keep taking in garbage into our country. Ilhan Omar is garbage. She's garbage. Her friends are garbage.
Okay. Now.
All right. First of all, let's say this up front. I mean, there was some really some bad corruption went on here. I mean, you know, in Minnesota. You know, this was not a good look for Tim Walz, the governor there. I mean, there's a legitimate story. New York Times, I guess, did most of the reporting there. I mean, yeah, so full stop there. But, I mean, listen, they're garbage. I could say that about other countries too. I mean, let me guess what kind of countries he would be talking about there.
The shithole countries.
Yeah, you know, you can name a continent. And
you know, he has not been to Africa during either presidency.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, you represent Minnesota. You're from Minnesota. I mean, you know, yep. The Somali community there is huge, right? I mean, it's
an enormous community and a great community.
Bust. I mean, it's varied. I mean, it's like any other community, but I mean, it's big. This is like
the biggest Somali community in the United States.
In the United States, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I mean, look, I saw it today. There was a Republican Somali or a Somali state rep or something like who endorsed Trump and who is waiting to have other Republicans from the state join him in condemning these remarks. But doesn't sound like there's been a groundswell at all. But yeah, it's depressing. I mean, first of all, that's kind of a new level of racism. I mean, it's not that he's much for nuance, but.
Well, now he's sending ICE to crack down on Somalis there. But most of these people are citizens. I mean,
the vast majority, it sounds like. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and look, I mean, ICE is like, it's a huge arm, kind of a domestic army he has at his disposal. I mean, which obviously doesn't have to necessarily track with immigration, you know, one's immigration status. I mean, this is like maybe over $10 billion in this new big, beautiful bill budget that sort of allows him to sort of hire at will and throw signing bonuses at would-be ICE agents and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, this, I guess, could be theoretically part of that.
So he is bailing on Ukraine, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to blow hot and cold on Ukraine. I mean, sometimes he'll sort of flex some muscles against Russia. I mean, I'm not sure. I would assume there's no rhyme or reason to this. But, yeah, no, I mean, like, he is now, it sounds like, the real tip of the spear here is this guy Witkoff and Jared Kushner sort of negotiating directly with the Russians.
Doesn't that sound like they're making business deals or something? I mean, it doesn't sound like they got anywhere. They got nowhere in their negotiations. Putin, I think, just wants to keep going. I mean, the deal that supposedly the United States wrote would have given Russia territory that they haven't even conquered.
Correct. Yeah. It's not only keeping the territory that they have acquired during this war during this war, it's adding to it. And by the way, I mean, the idea that Russia doesn't want to, I mean, Russia is losing tens of thousands of people like a month, in so much as a country is losing a great deal of its soldiers and its treasure and so forth. I mean, this war is just devastating to Russia, theoretically to Putin, politically.
I don't think he cares about himself.
No, I don't think he does either. Certainly Trump doesn't seem to care about it as long as there's like some kind of deal to be made and God knows what kind of profiteering there is to be made. But either way, I mean, Ukraine does not seem to be involved in these negotiations at this point. NATO doesn't seem to be at all involved in this point. Even, you know, who knows what Marco Rubio's involvement in, the Secretary of State or anyone else. You know, look, it's I don't know where this is all going to land, but it certainly doesn't look like it's the kind of negotiation or sort of considered negotiation you would want in a situation like this.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back real soon with Mark Leibovich. Like most of you, my skin needs some extra care this time of year. The colder weather dries it out, especially if you're old like me. And that's why I've continued to use OneSkin. Customers consistently rave about how their skin is smoother, firmer, and healthier looking, with results that get better over time, improving both the appearance and the overall health of their skin. No wonder OneSkin's products have over 10,000 five-star reviews. That's because all of OneSkin's products are designed to layer seamlessly and replace multiple steps in your routine, making skin health easier and smarter at every age. Now, I've never been one for a skincare routine, but OneSkin makes it as simple as can be. All you have to do is pat your skin dry and apply twice a day. At the helm of this iconic skincare brand is their founding all-women team of longevity scientists with PhDs in stem cell biology, skin regeneration, and tissue engineering. OneSkin is changing how we age by focusing on skin and scalp health at the cellular level. Powered by their patented OS01 peptide, every formula is designed to keep skin healthier, stronger, and more resilient over time. OneSkin has just launched their limited edition holiday sets, including the Nightly Rewind gift set, a great gift for anyone looking to upgrade their nightly routine. It features their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, and a cooling gua sha tool. Okay, I don't know what a gua sha tool is, but I trust OneSkin's recommendation to use one. Each component of the set is designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for a stronger, smoother, and more resilient skin. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code Franken at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code Franken. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. So we got a new sponsor, Graza, my olive oil of choice. You know, I love to cook for me and Franny and for my kids and grandchildren, for friends. And I love cooking with olive oil. And Graza is a delicious, easy-to-use, extra virgin olive oil at an affordable, everyday price. Graza is always fresh. They pick, press, and bottle all their olives in the same season. You can see the harvest date on every bottle. I never thought about that before, but it's comforting. Graza has two types of extra virgin olive oils to stock your kitchen. Their Sizzle, that's their everyday cooking oil, perfect for roasting, sauteing, and, well, anything you cook. And they also have Drizzle, a flavorful finishing oil that's great for dipping bread and whipping up a salad dressing. That's Sizzle and Drizzle, the name of the two Graza brothers. And Graza makes a great gift for the home cook, perfect for cooking your favorite foods and all the holiday classics. Plus, it looks great in their kitchen. How about gifting the dinner party pack, which comes with a limited edition bottle of wine, olive oil for both cooking and finishing, plus a custom corkscrew and a bag of extra virgin olive oil potato chips. It's like a complete dinner party in a box. So head to graza.co/franken and use Franken to get 10% off your order and get cooking this holiday season with some fresh, delicious olive oil. That's graza.co and use promo code Franken today for 10% off your first order. Graza, the best olive oil in my kitchen. And we're back with Mark Leibovich. Did you watch the press conference with
the cabinet meeting? Yeah, he was, Rubio did a great job. He was lavish in his praise. I mean, especially when you juxtapose it to how harsh his criticism was when he ran against him a few years ago. But the problem is Trump fell asleep, or apparently according to the photos, while Rubio was going on. And I watched it. Trump appeared to have his eyes closed. Now,
it was actually during, can we play what we have of Rubio? Rubio blows so much smoke up Trump's ass, and I want to play this because it's to me it's hilarious.
The president's taken on this issue of Sudan personally, not send out deputies to do it, again far away from the United States, because he's the only leader in the world that can bring it about to an end, not to mention all the other peace deals, very dangerous ones like India and Pakistan or Cambodia and Thailand. And so on all these things, Mr. President, I think you deserve tremendous credit for the transformational aspect of our foreign policy. For the first time in probably four decades, the American foreign policy is driven by what is good for America and Americans, whether it makes us safer and stronger and more prosperous. If it is, he's for it. If it doesn't, he's against it. And that sort of clarity is transformational.
Wow. Sounds like a pretty good thing.
Mm-hmm. And he was asleep the whole time.
I don't know if it was the whole time, but I mean,
he
watched it. So he, again, the White House it says that he was deep in reflection and closing his eyes while he listened, because, you know, so maybe that's what he was doing. But either way, I mean, the visual kind of ruined whatever it was, because, you know, I mean, look, they spent like literally hours going around the table, which is what I guess a cabinet meeting is in this day and age. But again, Trump sort of ruined the takeaway from the meeting is, hey, look, Trump can't even stay awake through a 2-hour, you know, wet kiss.
So where is Trump now? He's at 36% approval or something like that?
There was a Gallup poll, I guess, last week sometime that had Trump at like a new low, 36%. And look, I mean, his numbers, at least his approval ratings, don't seem to be going in a good direction for him. So, yeah, I mean, Gallup's obviously a very, very, you know, reputable poll.
And so I want to ask you about, is it too early to predict midterms or to be talking about that?
No, I mean, historically speaking, I mean, the party out of power and Democrats have been completely locked out of power in all the branches since 2024. You know, Democrats historically are positioned to do well because the minority party out of power traditionally does well in a midterm election. Add to that the idea that the Trump's approvals are tanking. But also Democrats have overperformed, you know, pretty significantly in all the either special elections or off-year elections.
Yeah, well, one in Tennessee, they went from 22-point advantage that the Republicans had last cycle to 9.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats were really, I mean, morale was terrible. And then all of a sudden, they did really, really well in these off-year elections last month in Virginia and in New Jersey, where Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey, just, you know, both won by double digits in races that were supposedly going to be even closer. So that definitely put a bounce in Democrats' steps. And then this thing in Nashville or in Tennessee, Trump won this district by 22 points a year ago, a little over a year ago. And an extremely progressive, not an ideal candidate for Tennessee, Bain, Afton Bain is her name.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe not an off year, you're just attracting passionate liberals. And
yeah.
That was, I don't know.
They were very nervous about it. First of all, the bottom line is they Republicans won by 9. Some people thought it would be closer. So, I mean, maybe Republicans breathed a sigh of relief because there was some concern that I'd be even closer than that or maybe even lose a seat. But, you know, it's a 13-point pickup in an environment where Trump himself, Mike Johnson, a lot of money, Republicans were deeply worried about this. And you had a Democratic candidate who was less than ideal for the district. And even then, they were able to overperform Trump by 13 points, which, you know, along with a lot of the other indicators and polls in New Jersey and Virginia, would indicate that you know, Democrats could do really, really, really well in the midterms, and unless, of course, they sabotage themselves, which they can do sometimes.
So is Trump been trying to raise his popularity? I mean, what has he been doing? He worked on the ballroom.
I mean, look, it's apparently he wants to make this ballroom as big as possible. So maybe if it's a really big ballroom, he can invite as many people. He can invite, you know, tens of thousands of people to the ballroom, and that would maybe make him more popular. I don't know. Yeah,
well, no, Trump, Washington people, though. So
no, come from all over the country. I mean, Trump would say that he doesn't need to increase his popularity because he already has the support of, what, like 80% of the American people already. I mean, you know, is this a problem? The economy's humming. Inflation way down. Wars are ending. I mean, I don't know. What's not to like, Al?
Well, I think Republicans are worried, but yes. I think it's a little too early on that.
I'm being sarcastic. I think they are worried. I think they should be worried.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mark Leibovich.
If you're buying gifts for everyone else this season, maybe it's time to get yourself something you'll actually use, like a mattress that helps you sleep better. I love to sleep. I love to get a good 7 to 9 hours every night. And I found out what really helps is a good bed with good sheets and a good pillow. And there's enough in the world to keep you up at night. Your bedding shouldn't be one of them. That's why I'd like to tell you about GhostBed. GhostBed is a family-run company focused on quality and comfort and cooling, all in an effort to help people like you and me sleep better. Their mattresses are made from premium materials to help regulate temperature throughout the night so that you don't wake up overheated. And they're built to last, backed by a 20 to 25 year warranty. You also get a 101 night sleep trial to make sure that it's the right fit for you. And here's the best part. GhostBed mattresses cost up to 50% less than comparable brands. So you're getting real quality at a fair price. I've gotten to check out their great bedding. The Ghost sheets are made of Supima cotton with tensile fibers, specially designed to keep you cool at night while also prioritizing durability and resisting allergens and bacteria growth. The Ghost pillow is a memory foam pillow that promotes cooling. Plus, right now during GhostBed's Cyber Monday sale, you'll get 25% off site-wide for a limited time. Just go to ghostbed.com/franken and use promo code Franken at checkout. That's ghostbed.com/franken, promo code Franken. Upgrade your sleep with GhostBed, the makers of the coolest beds in the world. And we are back with Mark Leibovich. So I read a couple of pieces that you've written on Dick Cheney.
Your hero. You always were extremely praising of him back in the day.
I hated him.
You liked him more than most Democrats like Dick Cheney, and you hated Dick Cheney.
That's right. Oh, wow.
The Ted Cruz thing, actually.
Yeah, yeah. But those are two pieces you wrote. One was about the memorial for him.
Mm-hmm.
At the
National Cathedral.
At the National Cathedral. And there were people there. There were a lot of Democrats there. And there was.
Yeah, there were only a few presidents. There was, I think, Biden, Bush.
Bush,
who one of the two eulogists. I don't think Obama was there. Clinton wasn't there, but Bush was there. Biden was there.
Oh.
Every living vice president. You know, Dan Quayle was there. Al Gore.
I see. Every living vice president. I got you.
Kamala was there. I mean, so it was definitely a good turnout, but the vice presidential community definitely turned out.
Okay. But you had a lot of Democrats there, and this is partially because Cheney, of course, endorsed Kamala.
Oh, he did. Like, it's a remarkable. So I wrote these two pieces, one after he died, one, you know, he just died the day before. And then, yeah, this memorial service. I mean, I love funerals. I think they're really. They can be fascinating Washington anthropology. And this was a great example of that. I mean, obviously, I don't love all funerals. I mean, they're very sad definitionally. But yeah, but here you had this, a lot of Republicans who have been completely cast out and are completely alienated and disgusted by what's become of their party under Donald Trump. And Trump, you know, Cheney himself and certainly the Cheney family would probably fit into that category given what happened with Liz Cheney when she was in Congress and how she sort of after January 6th became probably, you know, one of his two or three most vocal and passionate and activist critics.
Kamala Harris, she campaigned with Liz Cheney.
Yeah, she campaigned. But yeah.
Was that a good idea?
You know, there's a school of thought that says that Harris should not have embraced the Cheneys, the degree to which she did. You know, I was at the thought at the time that, you know, it does look, you'll take any support you can get, whether it's, I mean, you know, tens of millions of people voted for the Bush-Cheney ticket and they're still alive and voting today. So, but there's another school of thought saying, look, Democrats are a progressive party. The energy of the party is on the left. There's no way our nominee should have anything to do with anyone in the Cheney family, Liz or Dick or whatever. So, I mean, it's kind of a larger philosophical issue, but the bottom line is, I mean, you go to this funeral, or I went to this funeral, and there's Rachel Maddow at the funeral, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's just a lot of people who
were asking, and
yeah, like the Republican senators. I mean, there was a scene after January 6th, or one of the, maybe the first anniversary of January 6th it was, where Liz Cheney was one of the few Republicans. Dick Cheney was actually there to sort of commemorate and support his daughter. And there were no other Republicans there. You had like Nancy Pelosi and Jamie Raskin and Adam Schiff and so forth surrounding Dick Cheney and wishing him well, and Biden calling Liz and so forth. Yeah, I mean, it was sort of, that was, I mean, we've known for a number of years that the world as we know it is just upside down. But this to me was another just expression of that. I mean, I remember I was walking out of the cathedral last week, and so there was Rachel over here, and you know, George Conway, Kellyanne's ex-husband, who, you know, very active, you know, Republican, you know, for many, many years.
Now considering running for Congress.
Now,
yeah, as a Democrat.
I think he probably will. And he could be your congressman, right?
Or that's right. Yeah.
In the more Upper West Side, right?
I might vote for a Democrat.
You know, is he a Democrat now? That's the question.
I don't know, but
no, we don't know. Yeah. It could be quite a, I mean, like Jack Schlossberg could run. I mean, Caroline Kennedy's son. Anyway. We'll put that aside for another day. But, you know, Adam Kinzinger was there. Bill Kristol was there. Karl Rove was there. Again, not the people that you were aligned with during your Air America days, Al.
Yeah.
And wasn't Rachel Maddow on Air America?
She was.
Yeah. Did you work with her there? So,
yeah
it was old home week. You missed a real party, Al.
Mm. I read your other piece after Cheney died. And I think I would have actually kind of liked him. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, yeah.
I mean,
you liked him. That was clear.
Here's the thing about Dick Cheney, right? I mean, say what you will about him. Obviously, many have and will. You know, right now, Republicans are at this age of hyper shamelessness, hyper vanity, hyper peacocking. I mean, Trump is like the cartoon version of the kind of tin pot dictator that, you know, Cheney fundamentally, I mean, this was antithetical to, you know, a person who was, you know, deeply ideological, deeply, you know, very, very committed to public service. I mean, again, say what you will about what the service looked like and in what, in service to what, right? But I mean, this is a guy who truly, and I always respected this about him, even when he was in office, he did not care at all what anyone thought of him. I mean, obviously, politicians theoretically want to be loved, and they want the affection mm-hmm. of the press, of their staff, of their bosses, and what have you. I mean, presumably Cheney cared about what his boss, President Bush, when he was vice president, thought of him. But Dick Cheney, God, he did not play that game at all. And that game is essentially in politics in Washington. A lot of it is just total bullshit. You know that. And again, I mean, he might have been a, you know, say what you want, war criminal, whatever. But when I would spend time with him, or in the time I was able to spend time with him, I was writing about him, you know, 20 years ago, right? Literally 20 years ago, almost. He, you know, he struck me in an odd way as a real stand-up guy, as someone who was actually pretty transparent, didn't pretend to be anyone he wasn't. And, you know, he had a shtick. He had this line that he used to say in his, I remember when he was running for re-election in 2004, and John Edwards was his opposite number. He was Kerry's running mate in 2004. And Cheney had this line in his stump speech where he would say, you know, a lot of people think that Senator Edwards was picked because he's charismatic and he's got great hair and he's really, really handsome. I mean, how do you think I got the job? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it always killed. It always brought the house down. And you know, it was also kind of innocent and self-deprecating. And okay, maybe I'm a sucker for this stuff, but I thought it was kind of funny.
Well, I would recommend those pieces. Anyone who's curious about Dick Cheney, go back to the Atlantic Monthly, which
maybe we'll make a book out of it. What do you think? We just compile everything I've ever written on Dick Cheney. And me and Dick, right? Like Tuesdays with Dick or something like that. But you'd have me on to promote that, right?
I think you should put that out at Christmas or something. You know,
I think next Christmas. You think we can rush it in? You think we could put it out? I mean,
No, next year.
Next year, because I mean, but I think when you sort of have the people who showed up at the funeral, I think that'd be my readership, right? I mean, that'd be the core market. So you look at I'd try to get the guest list.
Well, that'd be self-published, I think.
You think?
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's self-published.
Anything else on your mind that I missed?
No. I mean, look, here we are, man. It's like December. Things seem to be depressing as ever, but here we all are. And you know, I think we need to be nice to people and kind to people and love the people we love. And it's the holidays and, you know, we're still standing. I don't know what this is all going to look like when it's all over. But I do think that there might be some signs that Trump, too, is kind of going awry in a way that a lot of Republicans are starting to notice, not just your usual never Trump Republicans, but, you know, maybe rank and file Republicans, not just a few in Washington, but also around the country, you know, might be ready to move on to something different. And I think that would be a good thing because it's been going on for a long time. I mean, if you look at Trump's approvals, right, which are low, it's getting down around 80 or even high 70s among Republicans themselves. I mean, you know, part of what made his floor relatively high, like say around 44%, was that he had the support of well into the 90s of Republicans. And you know, when you drop 10, 15 points off of that, it's a significant hit. So maybe that's where some of this is coming in and we can be something, you know, maybe this is moving us towards a better place. But look, I'm just an observer here, Al.
Well, as always, we appreciate what you write when you report on The Atlantic.
Al, great to be with you anytime. Glad to be a friend of the Al Franken podcast.
Well, thank you, and you're a great friend. Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.
Really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings, you look for deals, you wrote out a budget once a long time ago, you still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.